Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Hey, it's a Friday. That means we have a special guest today, and can't get much more special than the president.
Ooh, how about that?
Of the Southern Baptist Convention, I should say. There's a lot you could fill in your own joke there if you wanted to. We're not going to do that. Hey, Clint Presley, everybody give it up for Clint. Thank you for being with us, Clint. Man, I appreciate it so much.
Well, I'm glad to be here, certainly. Thank you for having me.
Has your life changed any since June?
It's odd. It really has. I didn't imagine that many people cared.
Listen, I want our folks to get to know you. Most of the guys who listen to this podcast are normative-sized church pastors, bivocational pastors, which is the majority of our churches. This is sort of their home. They feel very comfortable with this podcast. So I want them to get to know you. Just briefly, describe your call of ministry, your early years of service, and especially in those early years, who were your greatest influences?
Yeah. So I felt probably early on in my own Christian walk that I wanted to be a pastor. So probably 11 years old or so, it's really all I ever wanted to do is be a preacher. But at the time I was a Presbyterian, very quiet, PCUSA, very quiet, very liberal church we went to, and already a believer, got invited to a Baptist church, and I was hooked. I never heard anything like that in Roanoke, Virginia. And so anyway, we came home and joined this church where I'm pastor, Hickory Grove Baptist Church, when I was 16 years old. And this is where I grew as a Christian, was discipled, went off to Wofford College, Spartanburg, played football there in South Carolina, and then went to Texas for my seminary, started there, met my wife. I was 23 years old, got married. Yeah. She graduated from Southwestern, got married, and went to my first church after 6 weeks in Mississippi. And so that's really where it all started for me.
And you've been in ministry for how long now?
I'm 55. My first church, full-time. You know, I did some before that, but I was 23 when I went. So what is that, 32 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Hey,
as you recall, who really influenced you a lot in those early years in ministry? Was there any particular pastor or anybody in particular?
My first pastor, first Baptist preacher was Joe Brown. And so his influence, I still feel it today. You know, the preached word, the dynamism of opening the Bible and saying, thus saith the Lord, that was a big influence on me all the way through, you know, college and early years of ministry. And then you get into seminary and I ended up at New Orleans Seminary. And, the man that influenced me there the most is a guy named Rick Bierjohn. He was an Old Testament professor that actually did his funeral. And he taught me how to put a sermon together. What to do expositionally, how to put it together. So that was a pretty profound influence. And then early on in my second church, I started hearing John Piper. And then Piper became sort of the influence. So it was kind of those guys. I never really had like a straight one-to-one mentor. I missed that. But I had to do it by proxy. And then through reading after that.
Awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, as you're aware, we are a convention of normative size churches. Now, for years, I've used the term normative size. I don't like the term small. Because you can't be small. I have a bunch of grandkids. Okay. I've got nine, I think. Yeah. If my kids take their children to the pediatrician and the pediatrician says, hey, your kids are in the 95th percentile.
Yeah.
Well, that means only 5% of the kids on the face of the earth are any bigger than mine. And basically, if you have a church of 100, 150 people, you're in the 70, 80th, 90th percentile in some ways. We'll look at those numbers maybe later. But so if I'm like right now, Clint, I 3 years ago, 2020, we went to a church here near Linwood, Kansas, near where Jill and I live. They were down to three remaining members, and replanted them. And we run between 60 and 80 right now on any given Sunday morning. And that's kind of where we are. And basically, that's not a small church. That's a normal size church. It's not small because it's like 80% of all of our Southern Baptist churches. It's like 80% of the congregations all around the world. So yeah. to call it small, I use the word normative. So it's okay. a normative sized church. So we are a convention of normative sized churches, churches of 75, 100, or even, in fact, did you know, I sent you some numbers. This blew me away. These things came out. 46% of our churches have less than 50 on Sunday morning. That's like nearly that's half of our churches
so
have
that's
less
amazing.
Than 50.
I had no idea. I had no idea.
It really is pretty phenomenal. And the latest numbers we got, 73% have less than 100. So basically three quarters of our churches have less than 100. So you're not really small. You're just like everybody else.
Right.
I served for, I don't know, 10 years in Kansas and Nebraska as their state missions leader. And we would have a small church conference. But really, we were having a conference for 92% of all of our churches because they were all that size.
Yeah, right.
Now, a small church pastor has a lot of unique challenges. Normally, he's the single staff pastor. Oftentimes, he's bivocational. And the expenses that we're facing right now with inflation and the cost of fixing up buildings and cost of insurance and then just the cultural headwinds. And man, if you're a normative sized church pastor, sometimes you feel like you're out there all alone. So you're the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. I hear so many great things. Kevin Azell sings your praises all the time.
Wow, how about that? All right.
How would you encourage these pastors who are listening to you today that are in a normal sized church? So there's nothing wrong with them. They're not weird. They're not outliers. They're like, you know, 70-80% of all of us as pastors. But they're struggling because, again, many of their congregations are older and culturally, the headwinds have never been stronger and expenses have never been higher. How would you just encourage these guys?
Yeah, I think you spoke to it early on in what you were talking about with being alone. You know, my first two churches, I was it. I came from this church, which was not, as you've described it, a normal Southern Baptist church. In fact, I didn't know Southern Baptist. Like, I didn't know what it meant to be a Southern Baptist. I didn't understand any of our missions. I didn't know how we did seminaries. I didn't know anything coming up in this church. It was only when I was pastoring a church in Southwest Mississippi, and I was it. I was the only one drawing a paycheck there, and it wasn't much of, that, of a paycheck, you know, that I was drawing.
Right.
When I learned how to actually be a Southern Baptist, and really, I had to learn it all on my own. So right now, when I'm hiring staff members. One of the things I want them to have is some experience serving a church where you're it and you learn to not take anything for granted. You learn to do things without being asked. You learn to do jobs that nobody even notices. And so that's a really good, that's the probably the good side. The downside is the loneliness, man.
Right.
I think that's probably the biggest thing. I think that's where associations come into play. Like when I was in Mississippi, is Lincoln County Association or 29 Baptist churches, and the director of missions, what they called him then, he absolutely took me under his wing, made sure I was around other guys, had me there at the associational office every week in fellowship. So I think you have to be aggressive about that. I think you got to force yourself to make sure you are in contact with other guys that are in the same situation, because nobody understands the pressure of being the lone pastor at a church trying to lead a congregation except other guys doing it.
Boy, that's so true, Clint. I mean,
you can't explain it unless you've been in it.
Right. And the stress from it, you know, like you see, maybe you work a 40-hour a week job. Your kids still have problems in school. You still sometimes have to struggle with the, you know, normal ups and downs of a marriage.
Yeah,
financially, you got to deal with all the
jobs.
Expenses. Your car breaks down. Right. Your air conditioner breaks down. Oh, and by the way, there's a couple in your church who are about to divorce and you got to go over their house tonight, but you still got to get up and go to work in the morning.
No rest. I think good training for that. Like, I think it's a mistake for guys to go off to seminary and just not serve. I think they ought to be serving churches while doing full-time school, full-time church, to learn a little bit about what you can put down, what you got to do, manage your time, how to go without sleep, all of that stuff. I think we're missing a little bit of that. The guys that are serving in churches where they're having to have another job to supplement their income, that's a whole nother level of doing ministry right there.
Yeah, it really is, man. I appreciate
it. It really
that.
Is. Yeah,
hey,
it's true.
So, yeah, since we are a convention of a lot of normative-sized churches, I mean, just if up top of your head, just talk to these guys about the value they bring to our convention.
Well, I think the, you know, what you bring to the convention is what I learned. You know, my first two churches, that's what I was serving before. I didn't preach to a room full of more than 100 people until I was probably 35 years old. And so you learn exactly what we do. That's where, you know, that's where genuine discipleship takes place. If you're serving a church of between 50 and 100 people, you actually are invested personally into their lives. You're able to disciple. You're able to not only preach, you're able to preach pinpointedly. And you know how the convention works. I think you've learned, if you're pastoring a church like that, you've learned how to do missions. You've learned how to cooperate. In a church like ours, you forget that we are connected to other churches. When you're serving a church by yourself, man, to survive sometimes, you are reminded of the connectionalism that comes with being a Southern Baptist, of how we do missions, what we do with the offerings. I think you bring all of that to the table and are actually what some would call the rank and file.
Yeah.
And, I think we actually are seeing a little bit of this sort of rank and file kind of getting their voice on in our convention to some degree.
Well, I do too. And this podcast is really a evidence of that. And, one of the great things I put it up every so often. Now I put a picture on social media. It's a Air France jumbo jet, which capacity is about 500. If you took every Southern Baptist pastor who preached more than 1500 last weekend, they could all fit on that jet. If you took every Southern Baptist pastor who preached to less than 150, they fill every seat in Kansas City Royal Stadium. And what that group brings to the table is we are in every neighborhood, every crossroads, every village. And we want to encourage pastors of 50, 75 to not feel bad about themselves, but as you said, to become disciple makers who can make disciples so their people can make disciples and they can impact their neighborhood. It's a huge strength. And man, I appreciate you hearing saying that. And I know our pastors are grateful to hear your affirmation of what they're doing.
That's where you learn. That's where you grow. That's where you learn how to do one-on-one ministry. That's why I learned how to do discipleship with men is in the church where I'm forced to do it. If this church is going to live, then I've got to be in their lives.
That's right. Totally. Yeah. Okay. You're the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Congratulations on your election. So talk to me about, I know you hear this all the time, but our guys want to hear this. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've identified or that you even identified before you were elected? But going forward, what are the strongest headwinds that maybe face our convention right now?
Yeah, so I think that for a long time we assumed the value of cooperative program giving. It just, we didn't talk about it. It's like assuming the gospel when you're preaching. You just forget to mention it. And so how we do missions, how we do being Southern Baptist has been assumed for so long that now that we've run up on some really significant issues, it's very easy to forget how valuable it is because we've not talked about it in a long time.
Right.
It's not been sort of the cry of being a Southern Baptist. For about 6 or 8, maybe 10 years now, it's been some sort of genuine issue, some sort of terrible falling out, with whether it's the sex abuse scandal or, all the debacle with the ERLC a couple weeks ago, or just pick an issue. All of those things, we forget about the missions and the education that we've all benefited from being Southern Baptist. And so I think if we can have some of that dust settle, I'm not saying we didn't need to face some of the issues, we did, but I think if we can start to refocus who we are, that's going to go a long way to helping us overcome some of the issues we have. So I think just having that fog, having it clear out a little bit would be very helpful.
All of the
lawsuits we got coming out, that's going to be an issue. We got to get through that.
Yes, we do. And
I don't know how that's going to happen. We're going to grit our teeth. It's going to cost us a little bit, and nobody likes the thought of that. We're going to have to get through that.
Yeah, we are. But you really called to this. You feel called by the Lord, so you know His hand is upon you, right? Just as it is every day.
Yeah, I trust that the Lord's in it. I trust that the Lord is in it. I'm happy at home. Me and my wife are happy. I love my church. And my life is here. I just want to see the convention doing what we do and doing so joyfully.
All right. So I hear all the time from guys, I do, you know, hey, why should I be a part of the SBC? They get on to social media. They look at Instagram and Twitter and they feel like, you know, the whole thing's blowing up and all that kind of stuff. And you should never do that, by the way. It's never a real clear picture of what's happening. But, you know, you're the president of the convention and man, talk to these guys about why they would want to stay in and actually increase their investment in the SBC right now.
Yeah, a couple of things. There is not a better, more well-organized, more doctrinally correct, more aggressive mission-sending agency in the history of the world. I mean, the history of the world, man. I mean, that trains their missionaries, make sure they are vetted. We know what they believe. They have said that they will not only teach according to, but not against the Baptist faith and message. You have the best trained missionary force in the world that are Southern Baptists. And we're supporting them. So our money goes and does that. In addition to that, you have six. Now, whether or not we need that many, this discussion for another day, we have six seminaries.
Whoa, wait a minute.
Well, come on.
I may have just swerved into something here.
No, Brian, let's pass that. We have six seminaries, all of which have made strong doctrinal statements that we can get behind. Yes. That are the most educated clergy coming out today. So that's a really good thing. In addition to that, here in the United States, North American Mission Board, planting all those churches, encouraging guys to revitalize. By the way, revitalization, really, it's a fancy name for go pastor that dead church.
And you know, Pastor, we say all the time, there's no such thing as a calling to be a revitalizing pastor.
Yeah.
It's just a calling to be a pastor.
Right.
In a place that needs revitalization.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's what I mean. Go pastor that church. That's revitalization. Every pastor in some way or other is doing some sort of revitalization. So I would just pick those three areas. Education, got international missions, North American mission. That's enough to say I should stay in that. Those guys, I want to be a part of that.
I agree, man. Couldn't agree more. And then also, you know, the way the Lord has just put this thing together, nobody would sit down and create a convention that looks like ours because you can't really explain it or understand it.
Right,
but
right.
The fact that no matter where you are, you've got a state convention that knows who you are, cares you, knows your name, likes you, loves you, will respond to you. Then, like you said, you've got a local association that loves you and cares for you and responds to you.
Right now, the waters have opened up in North Carolina, and there are hundreds of people headed east. Yep. They're all North Carolina Baptists that are going to work to help those that have lost everything. That don't just happen. That's cooperative program dollars making that happen.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, man. All right, you convinced me, Pastor. I'm going to stay for another few weeks.
Stay in, brother. Stay in. There you go. Huh? Stay in, brother.
Well, I've been in for a long time, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It's been over 50 years, I think. And I've worked for Southern Baptists for 40 years, so I believe in them too. And I'm so grateful for you and for the encouragement you've given. All right, now, we always finish these podcasts with something we call the final four. Four final questions. If you get them right, then we'll send you some lovely gifts. First of all, do you remember the very first concert you ever went to all by yourself? What music group was it? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I never have been to one.
And even a Christian concert?
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I'm not a very fun guy. I can't remember going to a concert. I don't know what I've been to.
When we asked Jamie Dew, I think his was Backstreet Boys or something. I can't remember.
That's probably one of those boy bands, Jamie Dew. That's exactly right. I probably went, I don't know, maybe.
That's okay.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah. Sorry.
That's all right. Yeah. Mine would have been the Blackwood Brothers. My mom and dad took me to see them and the old gospel quartet. So
I would have loved to seen Lynyrd Skynyrd, but they died in a plane crash when I was about seven. So,
say a little late for that game. What was the first car you ever drove? What was your first vehicle?
I had a 1966 Dodge Coronet with a 318 V8 and, I punched holes in the muffler because my dad wouldn't let me get dual exhaust.
What town was that in?
Here in Charlotte.
Really?
Here in Charlotte. Oh, yeah. I grew up here in Charlotte.
That's great. I love it. So are you SEC or are you ACC?
Yeah, I'm guessing you're talking about football.
Are you Atlantic Coast Conference or Southeast Conference, or do you care?
Look, man, I played football at Wofford College in Spartanburg. We were 1AA, and I haven't looked at it since. I don't watch it. I don't watch football, so I don't know.
What position did you play?
I was an outside linebacker.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Very good. And let's see. We got one more.
All right.
Barbecue?
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite kind of barbecue? Any favorite kind of anything you particularly like in terms of barbecue? Because our listeners love barbecue.
Man, I love brisket. I love
really?
Brisket. Really? Yo, yeah.
You ever smoke your own brisket, or you just get somebody else to do it for you?
No. I want to go somewhere and let them do it. I want to eat it.
How many children do you have?
I have two boys that are adult children. My youngest son died almost a year ago. Coming up, probably next week will be the year anniversary of his death. He was 24. And my oldest son, Mac, he'll be 28 December. He and his wife have been married 2 years, and we found out they're expecting.
Oh, you're going to be a grandfather.
Yeah, goodness gracious. That's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, you're just too young for that. You just look entirely
that's
too
what
young.
I keep telling myself. Right.
Man, thank you for giving us the time today. I do appreciate it. We're going to send you a hat. This is, I don't know if you've probably seen these or not. This is the International Harvester hat. And
right on.
We use this because we believe Jesus is the International Harvester. And we believe that pastoring a church, especially in revitalizations like farming, you got to know a lot about a lot. Farmers got to know about crops. They got to know about the weather. They got to know about the economy. They got to know about machinery. They got to know about livestock. They got to know about business. And they do all that work, and yet they can become a tornado or a flood or hail or a frost. And at the end of the day, their work is necessary, but it's God who makes the crops grow. And so the same thing with the church. So we checked with International Harvester. We said, can we give these hats away and put the NAM logo on it? And
how about
they
that?
Said, sure. Nobody else is buying them. So
you're going to send me one of those hats?
So,
you're going to send that to me, Mark?
That
to me?
So that's what we do. So a lot of our guys in revitalization will wear the International Harvester hat. And people say, hey, do you have an International Harvester tractor? Or do you work for International Harvester? And our guys say, well, I do work for the International Harvester. Because Jesus will bring in the harvest.
So
we're going to send you that hat. We'll send you a copy of our book. And then we have a fine collection of motel soaps and shampoos we've collected over the years from our travels.
Brother, that's outstanding. Thank you.
We'll put those in a gift box.
That's outstanding. Yes, sir.
you're familiar with those, I'm sure, if you've been traveling.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Hey, I look forward to seeing you in person. Our guys will pray for you and the leadership you give. Thank you for your sweet spirit, your kind heart, your loving spirit, your pastor spirit. We're grateful for you, man.
Thanks, brother. I really appreciate you having me on.
And it's been fun. All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Yes, sir.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.